All right, good morning, everyone. So we're going to continue today in Kapitel Nunhei, in chapter 55. This is going to be our third shiur on chapter 55. Because the truth is, although the theme of Kapitel Nunhei, of chapter 55, is not the unique one, again, the theme of betrayal, the theme of, unfortunately, backstabbing in David HaMelech's life, the theme of being undermined by those who are closest to you or those who love you is not a new theme in Sefer Tehillim, but David HaMelech expresses it in a particularly raw way in this particular kapitel. So I want to draw your attention to one pasuk. Our shiur is going to be focused on one pasuk. It's the one that's bolded, larger font, underlined. It's Kapitel Nunhei, chapter 55, pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. And the pasuk says, Asher Yachtov Nam Tiksod Bebeis Elokim Nahalech Beragesh. So we'll just use a literal translation over here now, that together we would devise counsel, in the house of God we would walk with a multitude. So like many, many psukim in Sefer Tehillim, as you mentioned many times, when you translate them, they seem to lose any type of real and profound meaning. So you look at this pasuk, and it's not exactly clear what it is that we're referring to, that together we would devise counsel, in the house of God we would walk with a multitude. So most of the mefarshim take one general approach to this particular pasuk. If you take a look at number 2, so we'll see between the Radak, the Al-Sheikh, pretty much numbers 2, 3, and 4 all take one basic approach. Look at the Radak. Asher Yachtov Ani va'ata, me and you. Remember again, going back to our first shir in Kapitel Nunhei, who is the primary personality whom David HaMelech is making reference to throughout this kapitel? Achitofel. Remember again, this kapitel, the theme of it is betrayal, but it's betrayal focused on one particular episode of betrayal, and that was the betrayal of Achitofel. So again, just to reorient ourselves, David HaMelech has a trusted advisor by the name of Achitofel. He wasn't only a trusted advisor, but what else was he to David HaMelech? He was a Rebbe, and what else? Almost like a father figure. Remember again, David HaMelech does not have an easy situation with his own biological father. We saw that by the episode. Not that we know so much, but the little bit that we see with the interaction between Yishai, the father of David, and Shmuel HaNavi, David was not held on the same level of regard as his other brothers. Achitofel, therefore, again, is a trusted advisor. Achitofel is a Rebbe. And Achitofel, ultimately, again, becomes like a father figure to David HaMelech. Avshalom rebels. And when Avshalom rebels, ultimately, Achitofel joins the rebellion of Avshalom. For a variety of different reasons, not really our topic, and the truth is, it doesn't really matter. He follows Avshalom. Remember, again, as soon as he sees that Avshalom's rebellion is doomed. How did he see that it was doomed? Because remember, David HaMelech was on the run. Achitofel tells Avshalom, keep pursuing, don't let your father have the chance to regroup, because the moment that he regroups is the moment you will lose this rebellion. Avshalom becomes exceptionally arrogant, especially because of the advice of his, called his cabinet, which wasn't really a cabinet, it was his friends, who were inexperienced in every area of life, chooses not to pursue David HaMelech. Achitofel goes home. Remember again, we learned about this, I think, last week, sure, the year before. Achitofel commits suicide. He hangs himself, taking his life, recognizing that the rebellion of Avshalom is doomed. So according to the Radak, David HaMelech is speaking again over here about his relationship with Achitofel. Asher Yachtov Nam Tiksod. So it says, we used to go together. Who's the we? Says the Radak, Ani Va'ata. David HaMelech is referring to Achitofel. You and I, Achitofel, used to go, Hayinu Mamtikin Hasod. Literally, what does it mean, Mamtikin Hasod? Kilomar, Shaisi Misya'itz Imcha Bedivrei Sodi. The Imcha Hayisi Mamtik Hasod. So the Aradak says something absolutely amazing over here. Asher Yachtov Nam Tiksod, the Aradak understands that David HaMelech is saying, Achitofel, I used to tell you all of my secrets. I used to tell you all of my secrets. Again, you know, anyone in a position of leadership knows that it's often a very lonely place to be. That the leader doesn't really have any friends, because again, very often people who have relationships with leaders, a leader, again, this, I know this is going to sound very negative, but people in leadership positions always have to assume that if somebody is having a relationship with you, it's for one reason, and it is because they need something. And as long as you give them what they need, they'll be your friend. The moment that you no longer give them what they need is the moment that relationship ends. I know it sounds a little bit negative, but it's the MS. It's the way that the world works. So especially again as the king, how many friends does the king have? The king doesn't have any friends. king doesn't have any friends. The king has family, but especially in David HaMelech's family, again, even the familial relationships are quite rocky and turbulent. So David HaMelech says, you know, I have one person in my life who I turn to. One person in my life who I shared my sodos, I shared my secrets with. Achitofel, it was you. It was you. You were the person who I spoke to. You are the person who I confided in. He goes on, Kilomar, Lo haya sodi masuk v'kasha be'ene achi isi nosei v'nosein bo'imach. My secrets, Achitofel, the things that I worried about, that I thought about in life, again, I always sought out counsel from the most private and intimate things from you. Beregesh b'chabura, skip down a little bit, v'amar, af kishayinu holchim l'beis alukim, l'spalo, hayinu holchim yachad b'chabura achos. Achitofel, you know, even David HaMelech said, when we used to go to the house of God, obviously the house of God, there's no Beis HaMikdash during the times of David HaMelech, he's referring to the structure, to the home, in which, again, remember, even the Mishkan, as we knew it, was not standing in the times of David HaMelech. They housed the Aron in a structure. They housed the Ark in a structure. So David HaMelech says, even when I used to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I always went with you. So meaning in those most precious moments of private communion with God, David HaMelech says, Achitofel, I went along with you. So according to the Radak, David HaMelech once again is painting a picture of, we were so close. Asher yachdov namtik sod. I told you all of my secrets. I told you the things most personal to me. And even when it came to making personal decisions, I always sought out your counsel. When I went to dive into HaKadosh Baruch, when I went to seek out my God, you always accompanied me. So you see what's amazing over here is David HaMelech, you know, if you remember from last week's shir, so David HaMelech seems to have moved on, right? He still keeps singing, even as a result, ultimately, again, of the B'sher Balach Itofel. But it tells you an incredible yisod into the way pain works. People, we've spoken about this many times, people don't forget pain. People don't forget when others wrong them. This is a very, very, very important yisod. You know, I feel like we've spoken about this before, so if it's repetitive, I apologize. But even if it's repetitive, it's good chazara. Remember again, when it comes to interpersonal conduct, so the Ribono Shel Olam tells us, gives us very explicit instructions. Lo sikom velo sitar. I can't take revenge on someone, right? I can't harbor a grudge against someone. Lo sisna es achicha bilvavecha. I can't hate my fellow Jew in my heart. What does the Torah HaKadosha never command us to do? I know that's a very open-ended question. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu never command us to do? To forget. God never tells me that I have to forget that someone else wronged me. And there's an obvious reason, which is why. Number one, because it's not really possible. It's not really possible. Meaning, Kadosh Baruch Hu could command me in a positive way to act certain ways, in a positive way to do certain things. Kadosh Baruch Hu could even command me to love him, because that's a positive emotion. Positive emotions you can command. To tell someone to forget something, that you can't do, which by the way, just as an aside, totally not our topic, but you understand over here, this is like the greatness of tshuva. The greatness of tshuva is, what do we tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Please forget everything I've done. So God, who is omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, God who is all-knowing, somehow has the ability to forget. I don't know what that means, because I don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But somehow we have the chutzpah to ask God for something, and we have the chutzpah because He tells us to ask it. We have the chutzpah to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu something that He doesn't even ask of us. He never asks me to forget when someone wrongs me, but yet I ask Him to actively forget all of the times that I have wronged him. And it's an incredible idea. So the idea over here is, emotional never tells me to forget. He doesn't tell me to forget, A, because I can't. B, because we've spoken about this before, holding on to your pain could be something very positive. And we'll discuss this a little bit more. Because if I've been wronged by someone, and I know what that feels like to be wronged, if I forget it, I run the risk of perpetrating that same wrong against someone else. But if I hold on to that pain, if I know what it feels like to be hurt by someone, then that informs and that shapes, that colors my interactions with others. I know what it's like to be hurt. And I don't want you to feel that. I don't want someone else to experience that. Mashenkin, if a person goes ahead and totally divest themselves of the experiential reality, then you run the risk of perpetrating those same wrongs against someone else. So there's this very fine line between, on one hand, holding on to your pain, but not holding on to the animosity. And therein lies the great test of the human condition. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore again, what's happening over here is the following. So David HaMelech goes ahead, and David HaMelech says, I'm still singing, like we saw last week's shir, but yet again throughout the capital he makes reference to the hurt endured with Achitofel. So once again in Pasuk Tesvav, which is like smack in the middle of the capital, David HaMelech almost like pauses and reflects again. I can't believe you did this to me. I can't believe you hurt me. I told you all of my innermost secrets. I bared my soul to you. I walked to the Mishkan to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with you. I did everything with you. I brought you into my life. And you betrayed me in such a dramatic way. Take a look at number 3, the Al-Sheikh. Same basic idea. Hashayachtov nam tiksod kasher nidbarnu al-sod misodos ha-Torah. Unuvakesh tuv tam al-sod kamoni kamocha. Hayu mamtikin ha-sod velo ha-edafta alai. So the Al-Sheikh brings in something else which is quite beautiful. The Al-Sheikh says, you know, Achitofel, you are my Rebbe. But you know, you never made me feel like I was less than you. Hashayachtov nam tiksod. Together, we plumbed the secrets, we plumbed the depths of the Torah. And never once did you make me feel, you know, the great mark of great people is the ability to make others who are clearly not as great as them feel like, I'm not going to use the word like peers or like equals, but not to feel like someone less. I remember, I had this experience, I had this chus to spend some time with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So Gadol Hadar, and I remember again, had the opportunity to sit with him in his study a little bit. And at first, he started asking me questions, which to be honest, I could not answer, because I lost all ability to speak in the face of the Gadol Hadar. But what was amazing is, to be feel like blanketed by a love and an acceptance of someone who was from a different world. Meaning, there's very little similarity between my life and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's life. Except the fact, I guess, we both put on tefillin, we both keep Shabbos. But his tefillin are not like my tefillin, his Shabbos is not like my Shabbos. But that's, you understand what a there are plenty of Talmidei Chachamim, plenty of people who know a lot of Torah. That doesn't make you a Gadol Hadar. What makes you a truly great person is the ability to exude an Avas Yisrael, a love and an acceptance. So David HaMelech says, Achitofel, you were that person in my life. You made me feel loved. You made me feel accepted, even when we learned Torah. And it was clear, you were a greater Talmud Chacham than I am, much greater, much greater. You never made me feel inferior. First of all, just as an aside, if there are any mechanchos in the room, just so you understand, the key to successful chinuch is when you build your students up and you make your students feel like there's something special. Truth is not just education, it's in parenting also. Never belittling someone. When a person feels like they're built up, when a person feels chashev in the eyes of a teacher, in the eyes of a rebbe, in the eyes of a parent, that's how people have actualized. David HaMelech says, at the end of the day, Achitofel, you were my Rebbe, but you made me feel like a peer. When we plumbed the depths of the Sodos of Torah, I always felt like your Chavrusa and not like your student. Listen to this. You know, whenever the king goes somewhere, he always goes with an entourage, but the entourage always follows behind, meaning no one walks side by side with the king. There's the king and the entourage behind him. The Gatmuma Gam David, Kizulas Malchuso Hayarosh, Hasanhedrin, Virosha Kabbalah, Shezikne Am the Chacham of Hayumalavin Osumacher. We know David HaMelech was not only the king, David HaMelech was also the head of the Sanhedrin, meaning David HaMelech occupied a very unique role in that he was the spiritual head of Klal Yisrael. I mean, leaving aside the Kohen Gadol, he was the spiritual head of Klal Yisrael, he was the halachic head of Klal Yisrael, and he was the political military head. There were very few kings after David HaMelech who wore all of those crowns, who literally had all of those. So David HaMelech says, so obviously, even more so with David HaMelech, everybody followed behind. He goes on, V'roi shegam Achitofel yemehem. Achitofel should have also followed behind. Amar ani lo asisi kein. Rakasher hergish, excuse me, here David HaMelech says, Achitofel, you made me feel like an equal when we learned together, and I made you like an equal. You were the only one who was permitted to walk by my side. Everyone else had to walk behind, but you were by my side. So David HaMelech, again, remember, there's no new information that's coming out over here, except David HaMelech, and this is such a profound insight. David HaMelech, you know, sometimes you see this in life where, so David HaMelech says, okay, I've got it together. Fine, there was a betrayal, I'm okay, I've got it together, I'm strong. And then what happens? In Pasuk Tesvav, he has like a little bit of like an emotional relapse. It's an amazing thing about how pain, how relationship trauma affects people. Even when a person has it together, even when a person quote unquote says, okay, I'm over it, I've recovered. Very often when it comes to traumatic relationship pain, it remains there for a very long time. Obviously, we're only 15 psukim in, it's not such a long time. But the idea that David HaMelech is saying is, I say that I'm recovered, and I say that I'm strong, and I say that I've moved past, and I say that I'm okay. But at the end of the day, you know what? I'm not. I'm going to try to get better. I'm going to try to pull myself together. I'm going to learn ultimately from this. But at the end of the day, it's a traumatic relationship betrayal. I made you my equal. Or I should say, you made me your equal. I made you my equal. I told you my secrets. I bared my soul. We dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu together. And yet, despite all of this, you betrayed my trust in such a profound way. Number four, the Mitzvah, as David writes, Nam Tiksod, Shineinu Yachad, We saw again, the Mitzvah that's David, once again, David was talking in the realm of learning. We worked through the sugyas together. We worked through the difficult pieces together in an effort to arrive at the MS together. So you see over here that essentially the Radak, the Al Sheikh, the Mitzvah that's David, all understand this particular, and by the way, almost all the other Mefarshim as well, understand this pasuk in a very simple, straightforward way that fits thematically into the kapitel. David HaMelech is once again lamenting the relationship betrayal. I'm trying to get over it. I'm trying to learn from it. I'm trying to become stronger as a result of it. But at the end of the day, it has left its scars on me. And every once in a while, even in moments of strength, at the end of the day, I break down, which, by the way, is another incredible use that David HaMelech is teaching us. You know, David HaMelech teaches us so much. In every word of Tehillim, David HaMelech also tells us that it's okay sometimes not to be strong. It's okay sometimes to break down. You know, we have this idea that a person always has to be a bastion of strength. Who says? Who says that a person always has to be a bastion? I mean, maybe there are some people like that. Most of us are not wired in that way. Most of us need those moments in which we could go ahead and not feel sorry for ourselves, but lament the difficulties with which we struggle. The difference with David HaMelech is that when you have those moments aren't there to wallow in self-pity. Those moments aren't there to say, woe is me, or look what's happening, or my life hasn't gone as planned. Those moments are okay. It's almost like lahavdil, if you have like a dam. So what do they have to do with every single dam at some point in time? Every dam. See, you learn a lot when you come to this year. Every dam has a release. Because at some point in time, the dam, kishmo kinhu, keeps the water back. At some point in time, the water reaches a level where it's the potential that it could spill over. So you have a choice. You could allow the water to spill over, or you could release the water systematically. What's the difference between them? If you let the water spill over, you don't control it. You don't know where it's going to go. You don't know what it's going to sweep away. You don't know what it's going to destroy. If you release it systematically, you could control the flow. All of Yiddishkeit is about a beautiful, well, many yisodos, but one incredible yisod is we believe in the power of emotion, but we believe that emotion must be channeled. Emotion must be released in certain ways. Because if emotion is not released in a systemic, organized framework, then it's sweet. I know no one here knows what I'm talking about, but it overflows the dam. And it could destroy anything and everything in its wake. We sometimes make the worst mistakes in life in moments of heightened emotion. It's not rational thought, it's emotional thought. So some people say, you know, this is like, I mentioned before, in the world of Brisk, so emotion was considered to be an incredible weakness. Everything was all about the intellect. Rav Soloveitchik writes that his father never told him that he loved him. Now the Rav says, the Rav's father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He says, I knew my father loved me very much. I knew he loved me very much. The Rav says that when he took leave of his father, when Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was a Rav Shiva in Warsaw, and the Rav was coming to America, they shook hands. And that was it. Meaning, the Rav said he felt very loved by his father. His mother was different. His mother was Feinstein. Right, the Rav was a cousin to Rav Moshe Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So the Feinsteins had a different kind of emotional temperament than the Soloveitchiks. But the idea is that, there are some that view emotion as a weakness. So therefore, do whatever you can to stamp, it's a mahalik, it's an approach. It's a difficult approach for most of us. Instead of saying emotion could be an incredible strength, passion is an incredible strength, as long as it's channeled in the right way. As long as it's used, as long as there's a release valve, and it's not the dam that overflows. So you see over here, David HaMelech, in the framework of a kapitel, right? Remember again, what does every single kapitel represent? You want to know the beauty of Tehillim? By now you know it. I mean, we're a couple of years in. The beauty of Tehillim is that every single chapter of Tehillim represents like a different framework or a different module of life. Everyone is a life module. So here, Kapitel Nun Hei is a module for relationship betrayal. What happens when those who I love go ahead and undermine me? What happens when those who I love stab me in the back, Chas V'Shalom? What happens when those who I love betray my trust, betray my confidence? So David HaMelech says it hurts. I have to grow from the pain, but I also have to give myself the ability to grieve. Because if I don't allow myself to express the hurt, if I don't allow myself to express the pain, then we all know what happens with emotions when you don't give yourself a healthy outlet to express them. They become bottled up, and ultimately they come out. Oh, they come out. But they come out in the most destructive, harsh, and overwhelming waves of negative energy. So that's what David HaMelech does over here. In the middle of the kapitel, kapitel tesvav, pasuk tesvav, there's almost like a little release valve. I say I'm over it, I'm still singing, sometimes I'm not over it. It still hurts, I still think about it, it's still here, but I'm releasing it in a constructive way. So, but I want to show you something else. Take a look at number 5. So this is from a Sefer Zera Yaakov. So I'm going to tell you, I've quoted from the Sefer before. I don't know who the Zera Yaakov is. This is actually the previous Rav of my shul is Rabbi Price Zichron Livracha. And when I came to Baltimore, there was a whole bunch of svarim in the study. And I asked his Rebbetzin if I could use them. He said, yes. So this is one of the svarim that I happened to find. There's Zera Yaakov on Tehillim. I don't know who it is, but it's a beautiful, magnificent mefarish. So he says over here the following. He says, in Pasuk Tesva, Asher Yachtov, that we go together. Who's the together? Look what the Zera Yaakov says. Ani v'ha'avos. David HaMelech says, I walk together with the avos. I walk together with the patriarchs. Nam tiksod. So what does it mean that we go ahead and literally we sweeten the secret or somehow we better the secret? Hatikun shel chet adam harishon. So this is from the Zohar. He quotes over here again this idea that it's the avos and David HaMelech who are somehow metaking, somehow rectify the sin of adam harishon. Sod Gilgul David, who Adam, Ubat Sheva, who Chava. So we actually saw this before because this is part of the general motif that it is clear that David HaMelech and Bat Sheva were meant to be with each other. How do we know they're meant to be with each other? The greatest proof to that is Shlomo. Right? The idea is, if that union was not blessed from God, then the offspring of that union would have been delegitimized from assuming the monarchy. The fact that the product of the union of David and Bathsheba becomes again the first step, the first cog in the wheel of the dynastic monarchy of David HaMelech indicates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses you. Not only that, but remember, David and Bathsheba named him Shlomo, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu named that little boy. So what did he name him? Yedidya. The beloved one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's this whole, again, it's not for our topic now, but there's this whole idea that David and Bathsheba were the Gilgulim, were the, well, I guess we'll use the term reincarnation, although I don't think that word exactly fits, but okay, were the Gilgul of Adam and Chava. And it was David and Bathsheba's role to go ahead and somehow be metakein, somehow rectify that original, that first Aveira. Now he goes on and he discusses this idea. What was striking to me about the Zera Yaakov was that he creates this connection between David and the Avos, which, by the way, is not, he's not the only one who creates this connection. We have this general idea, although, again, in Yiddishkeit, whenever we speak about foundations and pillars, we always focus on how many? Three, right? Three is the magic number, although I think very often in our mind, it's not three that represents stability. What is it? It's four, right? But yet, it's clear that in the eyes of Chazal, it's three that represents stability. There's three avos, there's ashlosha dvaram ha'olam, omeid, there's tshuva, tefillot, tzedaka, ma'avir nesorah ha'gizera. There's this constant motif of three. David HaMelech seems to be the fourth. There's the avos, and there's David. Now the truth is, it's not just David. Moshe Rabbeinu also has a role in this. Yoshua has a role in this. Yosef has a role in this. But yet again, you find much literature devoted to this motif of the three avos, and the fourth pillar being David HaMelech. So, to kind of jump off this David-avos connection, I want to take you through something in this week's parsha. So take a look at number 6. So again, this week's parasha, Parashas Vayeshev, is the dramatic episode of the sale of Yosef. There's a lot to talk about with that, which we're not going to get into now. We're picking up right after the sale. So remember again, the brothers do not tell Yaakov what they did. Instead, and the brothers don't directly lie to Yaakov either. Instead, what they do is, they present Yaakov with circumstantial evidence. Vayichu es ketones Yosef, vayishchatu sirizim, I'm in number 6, vayichlo es ketones badam, vayishalchu es ketones apasim, vayavu al avihem, vayomru, zos matzanu, hakir no, haksonis bincha hi imlo. So they go ahead and they send Yaakov Avinu the cloak of the coat of Yosef smeared with blood. And they say to Yaakov, do you recognize the coat or not? Do you recognize? Is this the coat of Yosef? Vayakira vayomer ksonas bini chayara ala achalosu tarof taraf Yosef. And Yaakov Avinu essentially jumps to his own conclusion. And his own conclusion based on the circumstantial evidence is that he was taken by an animal, killed by an animal, the animal tore him to pieces. All there is left of him is this coat. And as a result, Vayikra Yaakov Simlosav, Yaakov, you know, goes ahead and tears his clothing. Vayosem sak b'masnav, he puts on sackcloth. Vayisabel al bino yamim rabim. And he begins a protracted period of mourning for his son. All of his children get up to try to console him. These are very strong words. He refused to be consoled. Essentially what Yaakov Avinu says is, I will observe Shiva till the day that I die. Meaning, I will go down, I will go, literally, I will see my son. The next time I see my son, Avel Shola, I will still be in a state of Avelos. I'll see him in the depths of the grave. Vayev Oso Abus. Yaakov Avinu, again, not only mourns for the loss of his son Yosef, but what does he do? He makes a declarative statement. What's the declarative statement? I will mourn for the rest of my life. I will not stop mourning. And by the way, this is not our mourning. Any parent who chas v'shalom loses a child mourns for the rest of their lives. That's not what Yaakov Avinu is saying. What Yaakov Avinu is saying is ki eret el bini evel sheola. The Mefarshim point out that Yaakov Avinu is saying is the rest of my life will be spent in an active state of mourning. I will mean, what do we learn about Yaakov Avinu? What does Yaakov Avinu accomplish during the 22 years that Yosef is missing? What does he accomplish? Or at least I should say differently. What does the Torah tell us about him during those 22 years? Nothing. Nothing. Why not? Does it mean that Yaakov Avinu didn't do? Of course Yaakov Avinu did whatever Yaakov Avinu was doing. But the point is, as opposed to Yaakov Avinu, who over the last few parshios has been the subject of so much frenetic activity, while Yosef is gone, he sits Shiva. While Yosef is gone, he effectively sits Shiva. There's no recorded dynamic activity of Yaakov, because Yaakov Avinu made a decision. The decision was, ki ered el bini eval sha'olo. Yaakov Avinu is beside himself. Now the Mefarshim all pick up on this dynamic, and are exceptionally troubled by this dynamic. Why are they troubled by it? Because there's a Gemara. Take a look at number 7. The Gemara Maseches Ma'akot writes, Al tivku l'meis ve'al tinadu lo. Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, weep not for the dead, neither bemoan him. So what does that mean? So first of all, what does the Gemara mean? Don't cry for the dead. What does that mean? Everybody cries for the dead. Rather, says the Gemara, Atifka lemeis, yoser midai. It means, don't excessively mourn over the dead. V'al tinadulo, and do not bemoan him, yoser mikashir. More than what is appropriate. You know, the beauty of our religion is that everything has a framework. Everything has a framework. And everything has measurements. Not just matzah on the night of the Seder that has measurements. Everything has a shear. Even emotional things have a shear. For example, the Gemara says, Hakei Zad, Shloshi Yamim Lebechi, the first 3 days that a person sits Shiva are ultimately again reserved for crying. That's why again the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Minhag, which I don't know is as widely observed today, about not to be Menachem Aval during the first 3 days. There's a concept like this, because during the first 3 days the pain is most acute, the loved ones are often in an active state of Bechi, and very often they don't say want other people around. So the Gemara says, first 3 days are Bechi. Shiva Lehespid, the remainder of the Shiva days are for eulogy, which again, eulogy takes on different forms. It means recollections of the dead. Ushloshim Legiyutz Lotisparz. Then you have Shloshim. So Shloshim, again, there are limitations on laundering clothing as well as haircutting. Mikan Ve'elech, what happens after Shloshim? This is a dramatic Gemara. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I Atem Rachmanim Bo Yosem Imeni. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say after Shloshim? Stop crying. You don't have more Rachmanis than I do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. It's a very dramatic Gemara. In other words, what are Chazal saying? There's a very fine line between mourning and questioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Rachmanis. We believe that not only, when a person loses a loved one, so the bracha they make is, Dayan HaEmes. I relate to God as a judge. I can't relate to God as a compassionate being in that moment of loss because I don't feel the beneficiary of divine God's compassion. I accept the fact that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is just. I believe that it's MS. I believe that it's correct. Can I say that it's Rachmanus? No, I don't feel that way right now. But my job is over time to be able to recognize that all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is not only just, but it's also compassionate. That's my job. And that is an incredible avoda that sometimes sounds like this. So therefore what Chazal are saying over here is there's a limit to external mourning. There's a limit to external mourning. Because at a certain point in time, a person, I have to bring myself to the level where I accept that not only is this the will of God, but it's also the Rachmanis. There's also an element of divine compassion. Even though I might not feel it yet or understand it yet, but at least externally, I must conduct myself with this. That's why, again, the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Avelos puts limitations on crying, puts limitations on certain things you could say during Avelos, during Shiva. Again, you have to understand, in the beautiful part about Yiddishkeit is there's a code of conduct in every situation in life. Just because a person suffers a loss, no matter how traumatic the loss, there is still a framework in which we live. There's still a code of conduct through which we abide. There's still a respect and a reverence for the Ribbono Shel Olam, no matter how much I dislike or have difficulty with some of the circumstances that he has visited upon me. So in light of this, it leads us to one simple question, which is, so how do we understand Yaakov Avinu's behavior? Meaning Yaakov Avinu makes a declarative statement that I will spend the rest of my life in mourning. Yet Chazal clearly does. Now obviously, we're not literally asking a question on Yaakov Avinu from a pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Obviously our chronology is a little bit up. What we're saying is, the Avos Nu Kala Torah Kula. And leaving aside what they did or what they didn't do, they understood the conceptual underpinnings of Judaism. They understood the emotional, cognitive, and theological pillars of our religion. So Yaakov Avinu understands this concept. He understands this concept. Just like Avraham Avinu. Torah says, Vayavo Avraham l'spodes harav l'ifkosa. Done. Avraham Avinu also, everybody mourns, but you mourn within a context. You mourn within a framework. There is a limitation to external excessive mourning. And yet Yaakov Avinu here makes a declarative statement that I will not stop mourning. I will not. So just how do we understand the behavior of who Chazal called the Bechir Shebavos, not just one of the Avos, but the most incredible of all the Avos. So I'll show you just a couple of approaches, and then we'll loop it back to Tehillim. So the Radak says, the Radak is actually a very beautifully emotional answer. He says, He would not be consoled. Omar Aviv, Shehera bo Aviv Abbas Abal Abena Ovidoso, Ki haya imo tamid, This is amazing. The Radak says, Yaakov Avinu never has the space to heal. Why doesn't he have the space to heal? Yosef was always with Yaakov. The brothers were out tending the flocks. Yosef as although not the youngest child. But remember again, Yaakov Avinu's relationship with Binyamin is also an interesting one, because it's clear Yosef is the favorite. Even though again, this is not like a youngest child issue. This is a Bechor of Rachel Imenu issue. So Yosef was always with Yaakov in the house. So what happens? You know, when a person loses a loved one, there are certain things that are triggers. There are certain things that are triggers that trigger that profound feeling of loss. It could be an event, it could be a memento, it could be a room in the house, it could be a variety of things. Did I access something amazing? Everything was a trigger for Yaakov Avinu. Why? Because Yosef was so actively involved in every part of Yaakov's daily living, that everything he did reminded him of his son. Every part of the house, every part of the tent, reminded him of his son. When everything is a trigger, there's no ability to heal. When everything is a trigger, there's no space in my life that is without loss. If there's no space in my life that's without loss, then at the end of the day, I can't move on. Take a look at number 10. The Kli Yakar is a different approach. The Kli Yakar says something quite profound. The Kli Yakar says, "Elias Nachem, v'tamo shel davar, shikra tanchumin hu kishiten achayel libo, shezame zachal l'raf tuvat tzafon l'tzadikim." You know, part of the greatest nechama for loss is that we believe that our loved ones, we believe that this world is a pruzdar. This world is an antechamber, it's a hallway for an eternity by the Kisei HaKavod, whatever you call it, Olam Haba, Gan Eden, we use different terms for it, but we believe that a neshama goes to a beautiful place of spiritual bliss, where they're close to the Shechina, where they're reunited with neshamas of the past. So that is what fuels the nechama of the Jew. So listen to this. The Yaakov, last lines, number 10. The Yaakov Rabu Ruach HaKodesh, She Yosef Eino Began Eden. You hear how profound this is? Yaakov Avinu saw with his Ruach HaKodesh that Yosef was not in Gan Eden. Now there's a very good reason why Yaakov doesn't see Yosef in Gan Eden, and that's why. Because he was alive. Yaakov Avinu, of course, does not contemplate that. Remember again, he saw the torn coat. He saw the torn coat of his son, all bloody. He has absolutely no, in his wildest dreams, he could not even conjure up some idea that maybe his sons were involved in the sale of Yosef. Remember again, if you notice, even throughout the entire Chumash, right, even on his deathbed, Yaakov Avinu at most makes one veiled reference to the Mechira, to the sale of Yosef. Whether he knew about it or didn't know about it, even after everything unfolded, is a big machlokis and mefarshim. Yaakov Avinu cannot imagine for a moment that somehow his older sons took care of the young. They can't, so all he can think about is Yosef is dead. Yosef's not in Gan Eden. Listen, there's only one of two destination points in the afterlife, right? So if he's not in Gan Eden, he must chas v'shalom be somewhere else. And the notion that my beloved child, the Bechor of Rachel Imenu, is not in Gan Eden, and therefore must be somewhere else, is something that gives Yaakov Avinu no rest. I cannot be consoled. Which, and if you understand it, so it's not Yaakov Avinu in any way lamenting the death of Yosef. It's okay, of course he laments the death. It's his son, he's a human being. I lament the death, but that part I can reconcile. That part. But the notion that he's not in Gan Eden, that part gives me no rest. Then we come to Rashi number 3, and Rashi perhaps is the most well-known approach. So Rashi says, "Va'im ha'eli esnachem, in adam yochal lekabel tanchumin alachai v'saver shemes shalames nigzira gzira sheyishtachech min alei v'lo min achai." So Rashi says something amazing. We're going to work backwards in Rashi. Rashi quotes that there's a special gzira min hashemayim. There's a special divine decree that literally the dead are forgotten from the hearts of the living. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at number 12 for just a moment. The Gemara Maseches Pesachim writes, Tan Rabbanon, Shlosha Dvarim Alu B'machshav Ali Baros, V'imlo Alu Dinu Shiyalu. Ultimately, again, there are three things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated within nature, and in other words, they're important things. What are they? Alameis Shiyasriach, that a body decomposes. After a person dies, the body decomposes. Rashi points out something amazing. Rashi says, because if not, what would happen? If you look at the first line of number 13, second line, Shiyasriach, Shimlo Kein, Hakrovim Hayu Matznien Oso. Because if it were not for the fact that a body would decompose, what would people do with their loved ones? I know it sounds a bit strange to us. They would keep them. They would keep them, right? Again, I don't know if it means in the living room, but I'm saying, you know, whatever it is. The point is, if I could somehow, you have to understand something. Meaning, I'm saying it as a joke, but understand the most difficult, Rahman al-Itzlan, if a person ever goes to a levaya, the most painful part of the levaya is when? The kvura. when the Aron is lowered into the ground and that casket is covered, and I know that I will never again see any physical part of my loved one. But one second, the person was already dead. The person was already dead. The Levi was going on. You have to, the nechama that a person has by being able to cry over an Aron, the nechama that a person has by being able to just physically see. When that is gone, the pain is accentuated tenfold. So, had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not orchestrated an issue that a body would decompose, people would keep their loved ones. The next, V'al HaMeis SheYishtachach Min HaLev. This is what I'm going to focus on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that the dead should be forgotten from the hearts of living. Now, what does this mean? Anyone who endures loss knows that our loved ones are never forgotten. I'm not just saying that in a cliche way. I mean that again, when a person, especially a person, endures a traumatic loss. When I say traumatic loss, any loss of a close loved one is traumatic. You know, even could be a person loses a parent and the parent was 98 years old. It's fine. Baruch Hashem, person had a richo siyamim. But, you know, they say that to Rav Kook. Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was sitting Shiva for his mother. She was well into her 90s. And they asked Rav Kook, Rav Kook was crying. So people thought it was strange. How could the chief rabbi go? I don't know if he was chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael or just Yerushalayim. How could the Rav cry for so advanced in years? Arichos Yamim. She saw her son become the chief rabbi. I know it's not a doctor, but okay, the chief rabbi is pretty good, second best, right? And how can you cry? And Rav Kook said, a child never stops needing his mother. So Rav Kook, a gadol shebigdolim. So what does it mean? The Mishnah, nobody ever forgets, but the idea is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with this ability to compartmentalize. You know, when a person endures tragic loss, the first thought that often goes through their mind is, how am I ever going to go on? And then something incredible happens, which is, we go on. Life is never the same. Things are always different. I'm dramatically different, but somehow, some way, we do go on. That's what Chazal is saying over here. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes there, Shameis Yishtachach Min HaLev. Not that, God forbid, we forget. We can't. We spoke, this is how we started. We don't forget. But that somehow I compartmentalize. That in this moment, what appears to be the defining event of my entire life, something that I feel is going to sideline me in a dramatic way, figure out a way to get back up. I figure out a way to walk out of the house. I figure out a way to re-engage. I figure out a way to be productive. Again, life is never the same. Things are never the way that they were, but I figure out a way to move forward. So says Rashi HaKadosh something amazing, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed this ability to compartmentalize when people are dead. What was Yaakov Avinu's problem? Not his problem, but what was the issue? Yosef was alive. So Rashi says, "Vayimain lehisnachim." He could not be consoled. He could not be consoled because the Ribono Shel Olam programmed the neshama with almost certain self-preservation mechanisms. And one of the mechanisms he went ahead and he programmed us with is that when we lose someone we loved, it sidelines us for a while. But then we have the ability to get back up. What Chazal called, we forget the dead. Which you understand, I can't say enough, doesn't mean we forget. What it means is sometimes we can take things from, I'll call it the frontal lobe, right? From our present consciousness, and I could push it back a little bit. It doesn't mean that it's not always on my mind. It doesn't mean that I'm not always thinking about it, but I could focus on other things as well. Yaakov Avinu doesn't have the ability, says Rashi, to tap into that dynamic, because that emotional or spiritual dynamic is triggered by Misa, is triggered by death. Yosef is alive. And as such, again, Yaakov Avinu cannot go ahead and move forward. Which leads the Maharal to ask an amazing question. So the Maharal says, in number 14, he says something amazing. Ve'im tomar, Yaakov haye lo lichshov, me'achar shelo haye yochal lekabel tanchumin, bevadai hu chai. So the Maharal asks such a fascinating question. The Maharal says, so Yaakov, you know this Gemara, you know these dynamics, you know all this stuff. So Yaakov Avinu should have thought to himself, what? If I can't get over this, meaning there's something wrong here. There's something that doesn't make sense. I know that the Ribono Shel Olam programmed us, with this self-preservation mechanism that allows me to push certain things a little bit further back to be able to focus on, if I can't get up from the Shiva chair, if I can't bring myself out of Shiva, then why doesn't Yaakov Avinu say, you know, something's not right here. Something doesn't make sense. Maybe the reason I can't move on is because ultimately what? Yosef is still alive. So the Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says, first of all, the Maharal says, yes, it's a gzera she'en ha'meis m'shtachach min alev, but what don't Chazal tell us? How long it takes. Right? Meaning, yes, the day comes that I'm able to go ahead and compartmentalize a bit and be able to re-engage. Who says how long that is? Who says how long that is? But then the Maharal gives another dramatic answer. If you look in the left-hand column, third line down, he says, V'yesh mefarshim, ki Yaakov chashav, ki lekach eno misnachim, mipnei shelo haya misya'ish mikvuraso. What doesn't Yaakov Avinu have? Yaakov Avinu doesn't have the closure of burial. Remember, again, it's not just that Yosef is dead. It's not just it. It's the manner in which he died. Right? He doesn't die in a bed. He doesn't die surrounded by family. Right? He dies in Yaakov Avinu's thought process of being devoured by a wild animal. Not only that, Yaakov Avinu doesn't even have the ability to bring his son's body to rest in Kvuras Yisrael. Doesn't even have the ability to have a levaya. Doesn't have the ability to deliver a spaden. Doesn't even have a grave to go ahead and go back to visit. You know, the Avos and the Mos have their place of Ma'asa Machpela. There's something, I know it's going to sound strange, but there's something beautiful to having a makam, to having a place. Even though I could connect with the neshama of my loved one anywhere I am, but there's something, we're physical material beings. So there's something special about having an address to be, and Yaakov, you know, I couldn't, you know, the worst feeling for any parent is the inability to protect your child. Those are the worst feelings. If something happens to my child and I could not protect them. Yaakov Avinu has to live. He didn't do anything. Yaakov Avinu didn't do anything. But the Maisa, the knowledge of at least in his mind, of how his child died, his final moments of being devoured, what he thought being devoured by an animal, and I couldn't even bring him to Kvuras Yisrael, gives Yaakov, he says, L'chach einu misnachim, mipnei shel hayom misya'ish mikvuraso. So the Maharal posits that Yaakov Avinu hoped that there would still be the ability one day to find Yosef's remains and bury the remains. So because, again, that window is still open, Yaakov Avinu can't find any nechama. So that's the Maharal posits. Because he thought, I have to bury him. I have to bring something. You know, I'll tell you something amazing. I remember during the World Trade Center attacks. So I was living in New Jersey, and we were living in an apartment, and we had a downstairs neighbor whose husband was killed in the attacks. A young bride. She could have been married for more than a year or two. And her husband was killed. And the pain that she had about not being able to have a levaya, not being able to, so you know, but in the outside world, sometimes, you know, they'll bury a box, like a ceremony. We don't do that in Judaism. If there's nothing to bury, we don't bury. And I remember 3-4 years later, they identified a bone fragment from her husband, Zichron Levracha. They identified a bone fragment. There was levaya for that. But I'll tell you something amazing. The nechama that it brought her to be able to have a levaya, the nechama that it brought her to be able to Baruch Hashem, is such an incredible, incredible thing. So the Maharal says over here that he wasn't Messiah-ish. The Maharal says over here that he did not give up hope of being able to go ahead and somehow bring his son to burial. That's why he could not be consoled. The Sfarno number 15, same idea. The Sfarno introduces a fourth dynamic, which is guilt. Guilt. See, not that Yaakov Avinu suspects that the brothers did anything, but it's clearly that Yosef was only out in the fields. Why? Why? Because I sent him. Because I sent him. Had I not sent him, none of this would have happened. None of this would have happened. But I'll show you something amazing. If you take a look at number 16, this is from an incredible, incredible book called Consolation. So Rabbi Lamb wrote what I think is probably one of the most popular books on Avelus, the Jewish way in death and mourning, right? Which is like that purple and black book. That happens to be, person should never need to use it, but it happens to be an excellent, excellent sefer on Avelus, written in a very comprehensive about Hilchos Avelus. But in the midst of the halacha, he also gives just a lot of like the hashkafa. See, he wrote a follow-up book, which is not as widely read, called consolation. So first is on the Jewish way of death and mourning, okay? And then there's a sister volume called consolation. And he says something amazing over here. And you'll see why I'm tying this into the, he says in Bereavement, paragraph A. In bereavement, people experience different levels of acceptance at different points in the process. Acceptance does not imply that we like what has happened, nor does it mean that we forget our loved one. It means that we appreciate the magnitude of what has happened, that we know that our lives will never be the same, that we must learn to live with our loss and to accept the reality of the person who has been lost. Both the good and the not so good. To accept means to realize fully that this tragedy has happened to us, unreal as it may seem, that God has decreed it, that it is utterly irreversible, that no amount of imagination or hope can ever bring the dead back to life. Leaving aside, of course, when Mashiach comes, we're not talking about that, that life has changed forever, that rebelling against that change will be of no avail, and that we must allow the pain of absence to flow through us. Paragraph B. Accepting means that we are willing to relearn reality. It means that we understand that at some point we must end our impossible wish that the person we loved will return. It means being ready to clear psychic space in which to continue to love the deceased on a spiritual level. Paragraph C. As a philosophy for mourners and others learning to live with pain and frustration, and this is Rabbi Lam's pointing out over here, I'm bringing this up because it doesn't only have ramifications for loss. It has, you know, loss manifests itself in many different ways. Some people lose loved ones, some people lose dreams, some people lose opportunities, some people lose their way in life. We all lose something. Usually we all lose something every day. Right? So he's talking about strategies for dealing with loss in general. He says, as a philosophy for mourners and others learning to live with pain and frustration, the idea of acceptance can be a powerful healing tool. After affirming death in its full terror can be a surprising source of serenity, an antidote to months, perhaps years of denying, ignoring, and struggling. The Bible, the Torah, provides an early example of this dynamic. Yaakov, although he rends his clothes to indicate the tear in his heart after the death of Yosef, refuses to fully accept that Yosef has died. Meaning, what Rabbi Lam posits is this, Vayima'ein lehisnachem. When Yaakov says, I will not be consoled. I will not be consoled means I cannot accept the reality of what has occurred. And you have to understand, I didn't quote it, but many of the Mefarshim understand this. What Yaakov Avinu is saying is essentially, I lost my Rachel, and I lost my Bechor from Rachel. Remember, Yaakov Avinu's entire life was about who? Rachel. Remember again, not in all diminishing the role of Leah or Yaakov Avinu's recognition that Leah was absolutely his Bashert as well. But remember again, his life from his youth was about Rachel Imenu. It was always about Rachel. I lost Rachel and I lost my Bechor from Rachel. I can't accept that this is the reality of my life. He takes the news that his sons bring him as news of loss, not of an irretrievable death. See, since he cannot bring himself to accept Yosef's death, he does not heal. Now again, we understand why this happens. This is what Rashi is saying. See, all Rabbi Lam is saying, Rabbi Lam is quoting Rashi. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, Yaakov cannot accept the death of Yosef. But there's a good reason. Why can't Yaakov, this is not a fault in Yaakov. Why can't Yaakov accept the death of Yosef? Why not? Because he's not dead. In the biblical narrative, this is all to the good. Because Yosef, in fact, is not dead, but alive in Egypt, as Yaakov finds out. Remember again, the most startling revelation for Yaakov Avinu, and by the way, this is an overwhelming moment for Yaakov, which maybe we'll discuss in a few weeks from now, is that moment when Yaakov finds out that Yosef is alive. First of all, it gives him incredible clarity as to why I felt this way for the last 22 years, but it also awakens within him a whole flurry of other emotions about what happened over the last 22 years. But Yaakov's lifelong unresolved grieving does demonstrate that there could be no healing without stout-hearted acceptance. So Rabbi Lam posits something, quotes something amazing, which is that the reason the Torah goes into such incredible depth about this story is it teaches us how to deal with loss. You see, Yaakov Avinu doesn't deal with loss in the regular way because the circumstances were irregular circumstances. Yosef was alive, and that's why everything's coming together. That's why, again, the mechanisms that HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted within each of us were not triggered by Yaakov Avinu's mourning for Yosef because Yosef is alive. Yosef is alive. But from Yaakov Avinu's mourning, we also learn how we are supposed to mourn. That ultimately, again, part of mourning has to start with an acceptance. This is my new life. These are my new circumstances. This is my new reality. And until I accept it, I cannot move forward. Paragraph F. E. The complex notion of acceptance is clearly and profoundly expressed in the well-known prayer attributed to Reinhold Niebuhr. Reinhold Niebuhr was... he was an American theologian, 1892 to 1971. He was the son of German immigrants. And he was a very well-known professor of divinity as well. And he wrote the well-known prayer, God, I think they call it the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There is, the Chazal say, Yesh Chachma Bagayim. There is wisdom amongst the nations of the world as well. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Paragraph F. Accepting the unchangeable does not require resignation or a refusal to use our talents and abilities to live life to its fullest. Rather, it can liberate us from crippling and counterproductive emotions such as anxiety, fear, guilt, remorse. This is the test. We need to ask ourselves, is there anything I can do about this problem today? If there is, I will do it. If there isn't, I will accept the predicament and not dissipate my soul and my stamina in senseless struggle. Out of such acceptance comes true serenity. So this, Rabbi Lam posits, is the incredible takeaway message from what happened with Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu cannot accept, for the variety of reasons before. Yosef is not in Gan Eden. I feel responsible that I sent him out, right? Because Yosef is alive. Therefore, the internal mechanisms of consolation are not triggered. But the message for us is the only way to move forward in the aftermath of turbulent life circumstances is acceptance. These are people who spend all of their emotional and cognitive energy focusing on what could have been done, what should have been done, how it should have... But this is it. This is where I am. And the only way to move forward is acceptance. Why is this important? Let's loop this back. With this, I'll end. So perhaps, remember again, this is what David HaMelech is saying in this pasuk as well. Asher yachtov, namtik sod. Together, if we just take the straight meaning of the words, Asher yachtov namtik sod. Together, we can sweeten the secret. Who's together? You know, David HaMelech has only one reliable relationship in his life, and it's with who? With HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribbono Shel Olam, with you at my side, namtik sod. We can sweeten together the greatest secret. What's the greatest secret? It's the secret that often we don't like to talk about. It's the secret that we don't often like to acknowledge. And the secret is that certain things cannot be changed. Certain realities are just the way they are. I like to keep within myself the fire of optimism. I like to always maintain the healthiest of dispositions. I like to believe that I could change my circumstances and always better my life. But yet, the great secret of life is there are certain immutable realities. There are certain things I cannot change. There are certain losses which are irreversible. And again, I'm not just referring to the losses of loved ones. For there are certain things that we lose over the course of the journey of life that I cannot regain, that I cannot retrieve. But here's what David HaMelech says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I have confidence because that you have given me the strength of acceptance. You have given me the strength to not spend all of my energy lamenting what is or what should have been, but as you give me the strength to accept what is and to figure out how to rebuild from here. That's Asher Yachtov Namtik Sod. It is only with you and only with your HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only with the strength that you give me, can that great secret, which is debilitating for so many, become sweetened. Only with you by my side, with the chizuk you give me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can the secret that things cannot be changed be sweetened. Only with you can I find the strength ultimately again to rebuild, not a life that I wish I had, but to rebuild with the circumstances I do have. And as a result, Beis Elokeinu Nehalach Baragesh, as David HaMelech says, with that, Beis Elokeinu Nehalach Baragesh, now literally translated as Beis Elokeinu Nehalach Baragesh means, Ribbono Shel Olam, I will continue to walk to your house beregesh. Beregesh means what? With passion, with emotion. See, Ribbono Shel Olam, there are many things that I have lost over life, David HaMelech says. Many wonderful people, many wonderful relationships, many dreams. You know, everyone thinks, it's amazing how our shit always comes back to this. We always think that David HaMelech has everything in life because he's king. What more can you want than be king? There's something that David HaMelech wants more than being king, and that is to not be king. To not be king. The one thing he wants more than anything is, I don't want to be the king. Please give it to someone else. Mizmor Adav Hashem Roi Lo Echsar. I just want to be the shepherd. I just want peace. I just want to be alone. I don't need all of this. But Ribono Shel Olam, I understand. This is an immutable reality. I lost my dreams, David HaMelech says. I lost my dream of shepherding. And I lost my dream of life tranquility. I lost my dream of simplicity in this world. I lost it. I don't have it. But Ribono Shel Olam, Yachdov Nam Tiksod, with you at my side, I have the ability to find sweetness even in that great secret of life. I have the ability to find sweetness even though certain things I cannot change. And once I accept the things that I cannot change, but I have to find the strength to rebuild from where I am, Beis Elokim Na'alach Baregesh. I can live a life of simcha. I can live a life of passion. I can live a life of incredible excitement. This is the lesson that David HaMelech teaches us. And this, in this respect, David HaMelech is that extension of the Avos. Because the Avos, each in their own way, again, we don't have time for it now, but the Avos, each in their own way, teach us this concept. The Avos, each in their own way, have circumstances that did not go according to plan, and the Avos, each in their own way, experience loss. Loss of dreams, loss of loved ones, but the strength of the Avos is the ability to not spend life lamenting what you wish you had or should have been, but building with the foundation that life gives you. David HaMelech continues in that path of the Avos, like the Zera Yaakov said, Shayachtov. David HaMelech says to the Avos, says to Aaron, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, I'm one of you. I'm one of you. I know we only need three pillars for the world, but if I could be a fourth wheel, right, the fourth leg, right, David HaMelech says, I feel like I've earned my place because I've internalized that mindset as well. Shayachtov Nam Tiksod, I sweeten the great secret that sometimes, again, you have to accept the fact that there is loss. You have to accept the fact that life isn't going according to plan. I accept it. And because I accept it, I could build. And because I could build, I'm confident that with all the difficulties I've experienced, I will continue to sing. I will continue to live life with passion. And I'll continue to see simcha in the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay.